Welcome to CRE Tech Talks. This podcast series is brought to you by Building Engines, providing web and mobile property management software to innovative commercial real estate owners, managers, and the clients they serve for over 14 years. And now, a man so unpopular, we probably pay guests to appear with him. In fact, even as a child, his mother tied raw meat around his neck so the family dog would play with him. Building Engines Senior Vice President, Scott Sidman.
Welcome to this episode of CRE Tech Talks. For the third episode in a row, we are very fortunate to have another local in-studio guest today, which, if nothing else, is a testament to the incredibly accomplished real estate people we have here in Boston. Our guest today is someone I've paid attention to for the past few years for several reasons, but especially because as a marketer, I've admired her clear points of view, the way she's distributed her message on multiple forums and channels, and how she's willing to be out ahead of trends and important issues, including a number related to technology. She was honored as one of the 40 over 40 women to watch in Forbes in 2013. In 2014, she was selected by BizNow as one of their 50 power women in commercial real estate. In 2015, Real Estate Forum named her as a 2000 woman of influence. And in 2016, she was appointed to the Legacy Council of CREW Boston. Today, she is the Chief Operating Officer of SVN International Corp, overseeing operations and brand development. And these are just a few of the many varied accomplishments we'll hopefully hear more about in a bit. So without further ado, I am very pleased and excited to welcome Diane Danielson to the podcast. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. Short walk.
It was a nice short walk and a beautiful day here in Boston. So we're going to enjoy them while we have them.
As we just talked about, we hope we have a few more. So beyond that introduction and all those accomplishments and all the things you've done, I'd just like to hear more of the backstory, kind of how you got started in real estate, and a little bit about your journey and to where you are today. And then, as always, as we talked about, we always like to get something unique and interesting about you that perhaps isn't revealed.
Isn't on the bio. Okay. Well, I have actually always been interested in commercial real estate. I didn't really know it, but I grew up in the planned community of Columbia, Maryland.
Okay.
And that was a lesson to me about how commercial real estate could be used for social good. We had no like country clubs. Everybody had access to all the facilities if they wanted to. Mm-hmm. We had affordable housing mixed in with regular housing. So it was a real, we didn't even have churches. We had interfaith centers. So it just depends. They would use the same building. So it was really based on those principles. And growing up, I'm the same age as the city. I won't do the math, but you can, everyone else can. But growing up was like just a fascinating way. And then when I got older and I was interested in more sort of a little on the urban planning, but I ended up going the law route. So I was a commercial real estate lawyer, more on the environmental side. And so I had some interesting work here in Boston, but it just never fit the law thing. And I like to say I'd rather build towers than bill hours. and I'd like to build sustainable multi-use towers with affordable housing. But then I switched into commercial real estate from being a lawyer. So I took the big leap from being a lawyer to sales. That's all anyone would hire me for in 96, which was quite a leap.
Yeah.
So I was a broker. And then I realized after my first deal that there's got to be a better way to do this. And that's when I jumped into the marketing and operations and worked at a couple of the very large regional firms around here who have since got national. But I actually left the industry. And I know you asked about the tech thing later or my tech background. And we can talk more about that later. And I had, I ran an organization called the Downtown Women's Club. And at one point in time, this had started when I was working actually what used to be Meredith and Grew. And with their support, they realized there's all these women executives out there and we're not tapping into that marketplace. So they supported my starting this. And it ended up at one point after I'd left the industry. It ended up being 30 chapters in three countries. And this is where the tech happened, was that I decided to see if we could make things more efficient. And instead of running it like a traditional trade association, we were trying to use technology to leverage conversations. And there was these new, we called them back then user generated content back in 2005. Wow. And there's this new thing called LinkedIn. And we were one of the first 10 groups that they put on their website. And there was something else coming out of Harvard, some Harvard dropout guy that we shall remain nameless. Well, we started something called UWC Faces, and we ended up being the first social network for businesswomen in the US.
Wow.
And, or actually probably the world at that point. But the next day after that got announced in one of the big trade periodicals for the tech industry, all I did was get a lawsuit from somebody who thought we couldn't use the term faces in connection with anything called a social network.
Who could that be?
Ah, geez, shall remain nameless. So after I'd spent all my money and we can't get into trying to raise venture capital as a single mom back in 2006, I'm it's not a whole lot better, but it was really impossible then. Yeah. I had bootstrapped my way to where we were and I couldn't do that. So we dumbed it down and we changed it around and called it an online directory, member directory. Yeah. So that was how I got into, but then with all the ups and downs and mistakes I made in the tech world. I even tried to launch a software company at one point based on the technology we had for trade associations. And
that's
then
a crazy idea.
It was totally crazy, especially in 2007, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So this was all going on. So then what happened was I realized that I so much more enjoyed solving these technical problems than running an organization, an association basically, or a networking organization. So I took those skills and I started consulting with clients, and most of my clients were traditional industries that are trying to adapt to this new digital world. And I could speak both languages. So I work with some banks, I work with some financial institutions, law firms, and of course, commercial real estate firms. And that's when I started building some regular clientele. Mm-hmm. And that's when SVN came calling. They had a different name back then. Yep. And I think the best line was they had the weirdest job. You have the weirdest background, but we have the best job for you.
So match made up.
It was. Right. And really what they did was they looked at the skill set. Yep. I mean, if you put into LinkedIn at that time, digital marketing or social networking, law, commercial real estate, sales, there aren't going to be too many people that are going to have all that on the resume. And they looked beyond the normal candidates because they said they actually wanted to include women. And people of color in their search, and that was something new and different. So that was over 6 years ago.
Okay. Wow, that's a great backstory.
So there you go. So there's a little unique fact in there about getting sued facts. By a certain someone from Harvard.
Yeah.
Dropout.
Really, and another interesting thing, just in terms of our connection, our co-founder started this company, David Osborne, is now our executive board chair.
Okay.
Environmental lawyer.
Oh, is he? So, wow, there we go. Well, I'm glad he chose a different path too. Actually, my trouble with being the environmental lawyer is only people hiring back in 93 when I was getting out of law school, which was another mini recession, not like we've experienced since then.
Yeah.
But they were all not working for the environmental side. It was more like I ended up doing a lot of work for Massport and putting in runways and stuff like that. But we were still trying to do it in a socially conscious way, but it was kind of, it was a different thing.
That's really interesting. So you're currently the chief operating officer.
Yes.
As a customer of Building Engines, I certainly know who you are, but perhaps not one of the familiar names.
No, it's not. We're working on that.
So that's part of your marketing.
Yeah, it's really hard when you change the name a couple years ago. But
so tell us about the organization.
We are actually a franchise operation, which is, that was one thing that attracted me to coming back to corporate America full time, because I was like, wow, it's commercial real estate, which I do like. Mm-hmm. I really like the people in commercial real estate. They're just nice people. They like to talk. They're very friendly and very smart. The thing with the... Oh, we've got things ringing.
Yep.
That's okay.
Yep.
And the franchise model intrigued me. My first gut reaction was like, that's something like people's dads did back in the day. But then you start looking into it, there's some really amazing franchises out there, like IKEA is a franchise. People don't know that.
Didn't know that.
McDonald's is the obvious one. It's just a different growth model. Mm-hmm. And what I really liked about it was that we're seeing an era in every industry where the mom and pop shops or the local independent business. I mean, we had some huge independent ones here in Boston who have all since gone national. Mm-hmm. But with us, you can keep your reputation. We don't put somebody on your board or anything like that. It's like, so if the Miller Company in Maryland comes to us, they become SVN Miller. So they can still keep their reputation and keep their independence. And they, so they operate as a true franchise. So my job when I first came in was to both create a platform that can work for our secondary and tertiary markets, but also primary markets, where we're actually working at doing more in primary markets because the deals still flow out to the secondary and tertiary. Sometimes the cap rates are better and the further you get out, so it's different. So bringing up the brand to to a different level. And that was part of when we changed our name back in 2016 to just SVN. You know, not, I mean, there's some other big ones out there that have done the same thing. So, but just to sort of elevate that we do national business because we have 200 offices in the United States and often in places where other people aren't. And we have a very close, engaged network. And so that's been really exciting. But the final, because I have to be consistent with my platform here, is why I came to SVN, besides the fact they were willing to have a woman on their executive team, which is very rare for a national firm. I'm often lonely, the only woman at meetings, but not in our company. But women and people of color do very well as franchise owners because it is an open playbook. You know, this is how it works. We can give you a playbook for how to run your company if you want to grow. And with our open, some of the programs we have that are unique, like our open property listing Monday call, instead of an internal meeting, it's open to the world. You can dial in, clients dial in, clients like to have their properties out there. So it's not just SVN calling. And so something like that. So once you get a property, here's an open playbook, you know? So, right. So having been a young female broker a long time ago, I realized like a lot of the trading was happening on lunches I wasn't invited to, not intentionally, or the rules would change. Oh, we told you you'd get that split. No, it's actually this. Whereas we're like, you know, 100% of 50% of the fee, 100% of the time for qualified properties.
Got it. Wow, that's interesting. So 200 locations, 200 franchisees.
Well, some of them have multiple. Some have satellite offices.
Okay. Full service lines? Management brokerage?
Or? We do across the, not every individual firm has every service, but we do have some that have them all. Some of our larger firms that might have up to like 50, 60. That's on the larger end of our franchisees. So we've been working on supporting larger and larger franchisees. But across the spectrum, if our office in Everett, Washington can't provide it, we have somebody that can. And they can bring in expertise, especially in different product classes, because there's a lot of specialization. We have a hotels group. We have you know, golf and resorts, which is different from hotels, as I've learned, because it's multiple businesses. It's completely different. We have, you know, a marina specialist, medical office, but I mean, it's just, you name it, we can probably cover it and the different things.
That's great. So again, for those people not familiar with SVN, sounds like, you know, there's a
lot. Check SVN.com. There's lots to come there, And it's just, and we're finding the franchise model is actually attracting some younger folks.
Yeah, with the
into
the industry.
Well, so we're seeing kids, or millennials are not kids anymore. Yeah. Millennials are inheriting offices, their parents' office. And it might be a local family office that they want to build and play on a national scale and have a national name that's recognized. Plus, some of the resources we provide are more than that. It will be more expensive for them to try to develop that on their own. So, so that's been, it's actually brought a youthfulness to this 30-year-old brand.
That's great. And that's one of the top, you touched on a couple of things we're going to dive back into, which is great.
So I know, exactly.
And, you know, somebody who pays close attention to voices in the marketplace and influencers, and which is a relatively new kind of thing in commercial real estate, right?
Yeah.
People having points of view on a number of topics. I want to dive into a couple of those in the discussion. As I said, you touched on a couple of them. And I think the very first time I became aware of you or heard you speak or heard something you did, it was about millennialization. It was both millennials in the workplace, and you might have been one of the very early voices saying that this is something people have to pay attention to. And I'd love to know what you saw and kind of how that came to you.
Yeah, well, I think it really hit me early because in 96, when I decided to stop being a lawyer and I wanted to get into commercial real estate itself. The only people first of all, I'd come out of being out of law school and being a lawyer. And this was the days before that social networking thing. So I didn't have that many contacts. I was basically starting from nothing. And the only people that knew anybody in commercial real estate were people's fathers. And I remember when I was interviewing, they said, well, because no one's gone into commercial real estate in the last couple of years because of this. And just like law, a lot of lawyers got fleshed out during that little mini recession. So when I got back into commercial real estate in 2012, when SVN called, we're coming out of the tail end. So I sort of like, so it was in my mind that, and I looked around and I was like, okay, some of these folks are as old as my parents and throughout the industry.
Right.
And I left the industry for about 10 years and I come back in Boston and the same people are still president of the company. little grayer, you know, but they're still there and nothing had changed. And so I started looking at the numbers and thinking about it, going, well, there's 5 years where no one went into commercial real estate. And so if you take a 5-year gap of not getting young people in a business, that's why our demographics don't align with the US labor force. Mm-hmm. We have 60% boomers. We still have some silent generation. Mm-hmm. Good on them. We need their experience and we need the boomers' experience. But then we have about 30% Gen X and we're down about 15% or so in Gen Y or millennials.
Right.
So when the boomers who are starting to retire all retire, there's going to be like a tsunami. I mean, it's a huge gap.
It's enormous. Yeah.
I like to call it a tsunami of opportunity for young people.
Right.
And we need to get young people in the business before the boomers retire because we need them to pass along their knowledge. But if you look at the marketplace, I think we're up to now the regular labor force, I think it's like 55% millennials. So we're a total mismatch. And you know what? This is funny because this isn't commercial real estate. Mm-hmm. Residential is almost the same.
That's really
I was surprised. I went through NAR. We went through some of NAR's research and we did calculations based on that. So we broke out the commercial from the residential, but the residential was a little more female skewed and whereas the commercial was more nice. So that was our thinking and noticing this. And then we started studying that and started automatically like, well, how do we retool the brand to talk to younger people? Because Sperry Van Ness was what we were called back then. And we were known for investment sales only mostly in Southern California. Mm-hmm. So when we're taking it nationally, we had been planning it for years to switch to SVN. And so when we wanted to upgrade it, so we actually have some young people that don't even know our old name, which is great, Yeah, so now the brand is known, like SVN is known for some, we have a couple great folks who are doing national accounts. Mm-hmm. And they're saying they don't even think we're the same brand, which is kind of fun. But so that for me was a big attraction to our company was willing to do. What do we need, Diane, to go find these young people? And one of the things we did do, I said, we need a study because no one's looking at this. And then I had this other inkling in the back of my mind. Can you take a commission job if you have a 6-figure college debt? And that, so we were kind of losing the ability to recruit our typical white male middle class background, and we needed to expand that. So we did a survey and we found it wasn't a huge factor, but was starting to be a factor. Like, I can't take a commission job. You can't. So at one point the industry might have to look at the commission. I know some firms are looking at it, like there's a team base pay and then you can get commission on top of that for what you do, which I think that's one of the trends I say might have to happen at some point.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
But, you know, building owners are going to have to be okay with the system that supports that. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's going to be some guarantees. So I don't know. And it's, you know, just like I thought billable hours would go away in law firms. It still hasn't. I get the lawyer's bills now. I'm like, really? You can get that much per hour? Is that a real thing?
Go back to the grid.
I know, exactly. Oh. Yeah.
So besides that one piece of starting to look at the brokerage commissions, how do you think the industry is responding? Do you think they've heard the message? Do you see movement where they recognize the tsunami that's coming?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of firms have stopped being resistant to the technologies or the change in how we office. We're sitting in here in your beautiful wide open office space with lots of meeting room for privacy because it's kind of a balance that you have here. So I think people are experiencing it and realizing, okay, this is the way it goes. And by the way, millennials are now 35 years old at the oldest end. So they're in leadership roles. I mean, I'm a Gen Xer, you know, we're kind of in the middle here. But I think those who have embraced it, like both, and stopped resisting technology. The thing is with our industry, the big holdout is that there are still folks out there and who have built up their, I always use the term Rolodex, and then I have to explain what that is to certain people. I know, I had one at one point in time. You know, they can still go through that Rolodex and do a couple of deals a year and on the phone and not needing to do the other things. Mm-hmm. But we're starting to see that it's getting, you know, as they're starting to retire and their clientele is starting to retire, there's going to be new ways for people to find clients and to distinguish themselves. And that's where the technology is starting to be more embraced rather than resisted. And I do believe that it will be, that's why we're seeing all this money flowing into FinTech and CRE tech, because it's the last bastion. There's not many more places that haven't been invaded with technology and apps, and and your company and things like that are capitalizing on this. Although you've been around for a little while.
We've been around for a while.
You've been around for a while, but you've gotten on board with what's going on. So I think there's going to be more of that. It's going to be interesting because clients are getting more sophisticated, but they're also new clients. They're not the same people trading buildings. I am really curious about whether millennials and Gen Z, which is coming after. So those are college freshmen at the oldest. I've got Gen Zs and millennials, so I got them both. And they're different. Whether they want to own real estate as much as an investment, because they barely use the real, like Starbucks is an app, go through the drive-thru, or Dunkin' Donuts. So they can see it, but it's not used. So for me, I'm looking at it more from a theoretical, like, do they see the value of commercial real estate if they use it? But they also use it differently. It's an experience. It's differently, but I don't know where that's going, and I haven't, I'll have to go do a study on that next.
Something to work towards. No, I feel the same thing, and I have older kids thinking about the same things, right? And they don't view real estate the same way I did, ownership and everything else.
Yet they're in commercial real estate almost every waking hour. I mean, and most of them are going towards multifamily like housing, so they're in commercial real estate. Every single important thing in their life, everything they do is in commercial real estate. University, meds, eds. I mean, everything is commercial real estate, but because they're living in digital worlds.
Yeah.
And by the way, us Gen Xers are the last folks to remember life before the internet.
That's
so, but they're, and then Gen Z only knows a digital world.
Right.
So they've never even experienced desktop first. Like we used to remember how we used to design software desktop first, and then it would go to the mobile, and then it would go down to, you know, whatever, the watch or whatever you're doing now. But but they've never experienced a desktop first.
That's right. Any technology out there that you're really excited about or that you've seen or that SVN might be using?
It's just the collaborative software in general. I mean, being able to work, because we're a virtual company, because we've got 200 offices, being able to work on projects, because really, I actually wish the real estate licensing has to catch up with the world. That is what's holding this industry back. And this just hit me like, I mean, I've talked about this before, but you say, what's holding the industry back? Licensing being different in 50 states. I mean, if I'm an owner, I don't care what state we're working in. You know, and it's really more of a protectionist play. I mean, lawyers did the same thing. I mean, I could actually, when I was a lawyer, I had a real estate license just by being a lawyer. You know, we wrote those laws so that we didn't have to take continuing ed for real estate, which was, you know, but so this is sort of protecting. And there's great reasons to have licensing boards, believe me.
Right.
But with a global society and with work, we're seeing a lot of specialization. So that goes cross border. So I feel like the licensing, and my other biggest beef about real estate licensing is in all the training, there's no commercial component in most of the training to get your license. So when you go in, you have to know you want to do commercial real estate. And that's where that closed network of not seeing a wide array of talent, especially from women and people of color, because I feel like both of those groups are pushed towards residential. And we're missing out a big talent pool. So that goes back, I mean, unless they're aware of it. So part of what we're doing now is you can't be what you can't see. So we're trying to reach out to veterans. We have a new veterans program. We're trying to recruit from a lot of different areas.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. And see, I've been in this business a long time. Uh-huh. Most focused on the operations side of real estate for what we do with our customers. But
got to keep those buildings open and running.
But again, that's one of the things I was never aware of, that licensing. I just always assumed that
there was
a commercial,
right? It's really geared towards residential, and I think commercial needs to step up. And also on the property management side, I would love to see more apprenticeship programs with tax credits.
Yeah,
that's my big beef. But I think one of the big trade associations needs to get behind and lobby for that.
That's really interesting,
because that's a group that's aging out too. Facilities managers.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And
engineers is another huge issue.
Yeah.
Maintenance technicians.
Right. Because they want to do the other type of engineering, which is very cool. But, we still need the basics.
Yeah. One of the things I always ask, I'm sure, users or, you know, people on your side of the table is when you look at technology that's out there and things that you've used or you've seen your franchisees use, and, you know, purpose-built commercial real estate technology, if you were talking to companies like ours, what can we do better? I mean, what are the things that you think that we're not doing well enough that we can serve the industry?
Oh, we've got to talk. The different technologies have to talk to each other. Okay. You can't, you can't keep translating and have the go-betweens and not being able to move smoothly from place to place. Just like I'm so expecting to see my text messages show up on my phone, on my iPad, on my, I'm going to expect my technology to flow between devices, to flow. And I know this is not your area, but accounting software has to get its act up together. I mean, it's not even software. It's practically hardware because it's from the 1990s. I mean, a lot of this, I mean, the fact that nothing speaks to accounting software well. And that's, I mean, basically we're a money business and you got to count the dollars somehow. So, it's really, that's the only thing I'm seeing great stuff, but if you switch it, it just becomes, which is part of the thing to not switch, but then someone goes out of funding or making a move away from a platform that we're comfortable with. I mean, so that's sort of being more, we've gotten beyond the device agnostic part. We were all there now, mm-hmm. but it's still being able to interplay with different folks.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. And yeah. I think both the things you mentioned were things that a lot of people talk about regularly. So it's good to hear about that. So you've touched on a few things that I wanted to get into, but one of the things you're clearly passionate about is gender equality. And I thought about you this past, last week I was at a client event and one of the keynote speakers was a woman who was incredibly put together this incredibly complex deal. Mm-hmm. One of the largest real estate transactions in this sector that had ever been done. And she was, it was a panel and she was telling the story about when she was putting the deal together and there are all these entities she had to go get sign-offs from and the structure and get all done. She told sort of sitting in the boardroom with the CEO and she was proposing what she wanted to do. And his line back to her was, how's a little girl like you going to do a deal like this done? And it's
that's like a dare. Dared me. Okay, this is so going to get done now.
And by the way, that was her exact response. And her message to the audience was, you go out and you get it done. And she said the most satisfying thing of her life was putting that deal done at the end for his signature.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I just wanted to know, kind of like, I wanted to share that with you, kind of get
That was a good story with the great end, but the sad part of that story is that just like, why am I doing this if you're not going to give me the benefit of the doubt? So I will say that I didn't actually expect I'd still be here 6 years later at SVN, but I'm given the benefit of the doubt. You know, I had to earn it. The franchisees were like, whoa, who's this woman with her technology talk bringing in here? And she's, you know, from Massachusetts and it used to be a California company. And, you know, and so it was a lot of change and I'd like to see the industry open up a little bit. And that's part of our focus, especially on the brokerage and the finance end. While we see the studies that it's like some places say 30% women, I'm like, not if you get to the brokerage and not if you get to the financing end of it.
Yeah.
So one thing we started doing is looking at the skill set that it takes to succeed. And my view was, well, we keep hiring these elite athletes and they're all male elite athletes. I'm like, well, maybe they don't have the right, you know, maybe there's other skill sets out there. And actually my research did say, yes, there is some correlation between a very good commercial real estate broker and being an elite athlete. But it's not necessarily the fact that it was athletics. It was the fact that you had grit and determination to do something that was easier to give up than to keep going. So then I said, well, there's got to be other places like that. And ironically, some of our top brokers, they might have all been athletes or some weren't. And they were musicians or accomplished musicians. They spoke second languages and military. So those are things that we're starting to look for, saying, you know, if you, you know, on resumes and who's going to succeed and we're helping to train. And one of the happy results we had about interns the other summer was across the board, we had half were women and minorities for the first time ever. And we found that the ones that were succeeding in getting offers, we were able to look at the resumes and say, look, they had, you know, the athletics or they had the music or they had the second language. And then the other one we found from just the resumes, the ones that did well, were actually childcare.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So
what do you think the connection is?
Customer service training. Yeah. You take care of someone's precious gem.
Yeah.
you've dealt with anything. So that was the other one that we hadn't spotlighted. So my idea with that is like, look, we have Title IX's been around for 45 years. We have as many women elite athletes out there. But we need to get the women to feel like it's a welcome environment. We also many people of color. We're seeing a lot more minorities having a better time breaking into residential real estate. hey, commercial real estate is not that much different, except, you know, you have clients that might stay with you for a lifetime instead of having to like get new clientele every time. So we're trying to figure out ways to reach out. And again, the military veterans, and actually some of the military veterans we've hired have been young African-American women. So, you know, from the military and you have the discipline. So I think by looking at what we're trying to accomplish and breaking it down. And the other thing we took off our standard hiring is you don't necessarily need a college degree.
That's great.
I mean, as long as you can do math at a certain level, we can teach you the rest of it. So we have a fantastic training program. That's what we've been investing in because we knew we're going to have to bring new people into the business. Mm-hmm. So it's been a long-term play to get where we are now. So we brought on like Solomon Pereski's, our, EVP, actually he's our new chief development officer, and he has built a training program that you can come new to the business or you can come been in the business for 20 years and still learn what's going on with how to do a deal or work in a different specialty and that. So that's been one of the things we've been focused on, and by leveling the playing field, by opening up and looking for new talent, it's been, it's really, I've seen the industry, our company has transformed.
It seems like you've made a commitment at an executive level, obviously, with you being able to drive that, which is good.
Yeah, we had a jumpstart training recently, and there were 40% women brokers.
That's fantastic. That's great. Yeah. So you're looking for attributes, you know, characteristics.
Skills. It's growth mindset and grit. I mean, if you want to read one book about, you know, it's that Grit by Angela Duckworth. I mean, it's just really, and so looking for that, because you can't tell when someone's coming out of college or this is their work. You know, this is their first job or their first, you know, but I'd advise every parent out there, get your kid a customer service job at some point before, because we don't want to train that.
Yeah.
That part can be done.
Absolutely.
So.
That's great. And how about awareness of the, of this as a career path? I mean, do you think?
It's not, I mean, certain cities, it's very like Dallas and Chicago. It's really a well-known career path. A little bit so in Boston, but it's still kind of closed networks. People think of Boston, people think of asset management. Right. So we're very heavy on that.
Yeah.
And the brokerage has always been around, but that's really very similar closed network sort of thing. So it's really making aware. So we've registered all our franchisees at all the colleges and community colleges for job fairs and things like that. That the recruiting, looking beyond that. I mean, I just said we don't need a college degree. So that's how we just started. We're working with the veteran, a couple of veterans programs now. Mm-hmm. So we've got listed as a veteran approved franchise. There's a discount and different things. And we're providing some training. CCIM has just started the approval for their training, but it has to be done in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So we're providing grants to any of our veterans that want to take that, and we'll provide grants to help them facilitate that.
So what kind of advice would you give to young women who want to see this as a career, kind of navigating their way up to and want a position like yours one day, right? Want to be in executive leadership.
Mine is like never stop learning. I mean, and just know that it's a lifelong thing. I mean, I have sides to, I mean, there's 1 year, you know, where I had to leave the industry because I was a single parent and I had a child with some learning, not learning issues at all, but some physical issues, all fixable, all good. And he's great. He's at college now, doing awesome. But, you know, so I kind of, you know, had to step out completely. I couldn't keep my vice president job that I had. And I really just, I think 1 year I was the best thing I accomplished was being the best lunchroom monitor because, you know, I had to get upset. But then, but I kept just going and learning. I mean, all of a sudden this new, the Boston Globe asked me, because I complained about something in their on the job section, that you're having a bunch of young kids from the Midwest writing this. You're leaving out segments of the population. So they said, well, do you want to come blog for us? And I've learned to say yes. 2003, I did not know what a blog was. Mm-hmm. I went out the next day and went to a seminar and it's like, oh, okay, it's just writing pithy little stuff. I can do that and put it on technology. I can do that. So I became one of the first bloggers for the Boston Globe. And so that was just learning technology. Whenever something new was interesting to me, I would just keep learning it and learning it and learning it. And so I would not have made it back to this industry at the level I did without having that outside knowledge. So for young women who want to be in this industry, you probably have a lot of outside knowledge that you could bring to it. Mm-hmm. And to not give up and to pick a firm and a team that's going to be supportive of you. And even in the bigger firms, which are the, you know, might seem like the old boys club. There are going to be people within that group if you can be on that good team. But I think it's very lucrative. It's just we need to give more opportunities and be more open. And we have to make sure that women and people of color can succeed when they're here and not isolated. Because if you're the only one, I'm always the only one. It gets lonely and it gets different, and you get, seeing as I have a sports background, the other fact, I still play soccer. And until recently, I got back on an Overhill women's soccer team, but I was playing an Overhill guys soccer team because we didn't have any women's ones near my house. So I'm more comfortable in that world, but yeah. I know there's a lot of other women that are too. And I think we need to be open to the hiring, and we need to make them aware that it's an option. Because really, when a woman says she's interested in real estate, people still think I work for a residential firm. And if I say I'm in real estate, I have to say commercial real estate, and just to make it very clear.
Yeah.
And I think there's to the residential brokers out there, I'm like, hey, give us a shot. It's more 9 to 5 hours and you get your weekends back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Big difference than showing places on a Sunday morning. Right?
And it's less of an emotional purchase. I mean, home ownership is an emotional purchase. This is a financial and analyst. And I think one of the things the real estate business has done really well is to put commercial real estate, we're marketing it more on the financial spectrum. Mm-hmm. Like when I go back to my college to recruiting fairs, we're part of the financial path along with, okay, you can go be an investment bank. And we've had more and more people at commercial real estate because, Goldman Sachs and the rest took a hit for a few years. Yeah. So we're seeing more and more looking at it that way.
That's right. Marketing
that kind of thing. We have to market our industry, or we're going to be dead in the water. I mean, in a few years when all the boomers retire.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's great. Some great advice. I think great guidance for the industry as well. It sounds like you're also saying the industry has to take a look at itself, and you need leadership to drive those changes down as well, right? And if they do, they're going to help themselves.
Well, I also think we're facing some new challenges, which is with the sustainability. I'm going to a climate change in Boston seminar next week, And it's like, there's a lot of stuff happening that are going to be long-term, our infrastructure projects. So we need young people that are going to be in for the duration to build the cities they want to live in, to build, to bring the culture back to the cities that they want, and to just create. There's so much opportunity right now to do them, to bring technology and innovation to infrastructure and construction and updating buildings to places we all want to work in.
That's great. No shortage of things to do.
Oh, no, there's no shortage. Unfortunately, they're big projects, so we need some people with big ideas coming in and who are willing to stick it out.
Well, it makes it exciting.
This
has been really good, really interesting. Thank you for sharing all those thoughts. I think you touched on one little thing, though, that you didn't share with everybody. You're also an author, aren't you?
the writing things out there. Yeah. So besides a few business books for women, I did actually write a children's book. And we just put out a book about the Yes Man difference, which was, we have such a unique culture. So writing's always been my thing. So whenever I get a chance to do something, I like to do that.
That's great. Incredibly interesting. You've learned to play soccer still. So
yeah.
Didn't know that part. That wasn't out there. Didn't
I went to the World Cup this summer in Russia. It was really fun.
Oh, that's exciting. Oh, that's great. Well, great. Any final thoughts? You're going to be moving into our building, which is really exciting
for us.
So we're happy to have you as a neighbor.
I just appreciate that you're interested in what we can do to recruit new people to the industry. And it doesn't have to be just young people. We just need new, fresh thinkers. Because, look, we work and other co-working spaces have upended the way we think about that. We're seeing changes in hotels and what's going on with everything from Yotel to, different types of, there's so many new, I don't remember this many new things coming on the market. Just rethinking how we do this business. Is this an opportunity right now? And it's a challenge. But there is going to be a lot of, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you again for joining us, Diana. It's been great.
Thanks for having
conversation. Really enjoyed it. You mentioned svn.com.
Yep.
Best place to get information on the company.
Best place to find information on the company. So we have information about whether you want to own a franchise or if you want to just join. I think last time I checked, we had 50 or so firms hiring in different markets.
Are you open to questions if people want to reach you for
absolutely. LinkedIn's a great place to find me, but also diane.danielson@svn.com. That's me. And I'd say if you can't find me on LinkedIn, you're not really trying.
That's perfect. Well, we'll share that all that information in the show notes along with the top 5 takeaways from our conversation, which is something we always do.
Oh, excellent.
I want to thank our guest, Diane Danielson. Thank you for listening. And we look forward to the next episode of CRE Tech Talks. Thanks.
Thank you again for listening to this broadcast of CRE Tech Talks. We hope you found today's session valuable. Remember to visit our podcast page at buildingengines.com/CRE Tech Talks to download today's transcript and key takeaways, as well as listen to other sessions and share with colleagues. We'll see you next time on CRE Tech Talks.